right, guys, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I'm Ben Alderman.
And I'm Blair Morrison. We're happy to be back with Jenny LaBaugh, fresh off of her Move Mountains run across the state of Colorado.
Short jaunt, really.
Just a jog, just a little jog.
Yeah, it's just across an entire state filled with mountains.
Tall ones.
So, Jenny, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of all the states you could have picked, why Colorado? Because, I mean, it seems like a very rough, I mean, just considering weather, altitude changes, and the different things that Blair was kind of alluding to. I mean, seems like a rough one to pick.
Because it's my home state, and my absolute heart and soul is there.
Ben, note the large flag of Colorado that is carved out of wood right above Jenny's head.
I could have noted that, but
or the flag of Colorado.
Have a hard time seeing that
hanging in the garage as we walked in.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like you're making this about us. Our problems, we should just leave off this podcast, okay?
We could be here for a long time to talk about those.
I know Colorado is one of the 52 states, Blair. Oh.
That's an inside joke for everybody out there. But Jenny, let's back up a little bit and let's tell our listeners, in case they haven't been following you on Instagram and Facebook through your journey this past month, let them know what you were doing and why you were doing it.
So, really long story short is I decided, we can get into why, but I decided to run across Colorado, 500 miles from the New Mexico border to the Wyoming border for epilepsy awareness, because I have epilepsy, so it's near and dear to my heart, and have a community that I can help and inspire.
So for a little bit for clarification for myself, can you just go into epilepsy and what that is and you know, how that affects people, you know, just what that looks like.
Yeah. So we could spend about 7 podcasts on this because epilepsy is, there's not one thing. It's not like I have one thing. There's 40 different types of epilepsy. So most people think of grand mals or what are now called tonic-clonic, where you fall and shake and people can foam at the mouth and pretty scary, right? I mean, that's what most people think of, but, epilepsy is just misfiring in the brain basically. So, there's like a little electrical storm in your head and it affects everybody's body a little bit differently. I have a constant tingling sensation in my right arm. So it's there 100% of the time. And when I feel a seizure coming on, it intensifies and I just can't use my right arm for a little bit. And, when I was 14, they took me off my medication and I ended up having a grand mal, the kind where you fall and shake. So two different kinds going on, but my medication controls it to that, what they call a simple partial gelastic seizure, which is that tingling sensation in my arm.
How often are you experiencing those?
I am so lucky. I've been seizure free for 2 years, but up until that I was diagnosed when I was 8 and I would have them pretty much every day, multiple times a day until I was 14 when I finally got a medication that would control it. And then I don't know the exact time on that. It was off and on for a while. And then when I was 30, since I've been 31, I guess I've been seizure free, which is so awesome.
So you had one almost every day from 8 until 14. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Multiple a day.
Multiple a day.
Yeah,
That's where you couldn't use your arm.
Yeah. So it's like 30 seconds to a minute where it's just this, the feeling. It's the easiest way to explain it is like you hit your funny bone. So it's just always there. And it's like a really, 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 really funny bone when it happens, like hilarious funny bone. And it, the side effects or whatever, I don't know if side effects, the symptoms are different. I mean, when I was a kid, sometimes I would pee my pants when I'm sitting there, or I would start laughing uncontrollably. So it really is funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious. Everybody was just laughing with me, but we didn't know why. But yeah, so there's all sorts of different symptoms. I don't know if that's a word that come along with it for my case. But seriously, I mean, one thing I learned on this run is there are so many different kinds and different triggers and different symptoms that people feel. It's crazy. There's a lot of research that's happening and needs to continue to happen.
Right. And like you said, there's 40 different types of epilepsy. Do we have any idea of how many people this affects in America or worldwide? Is there statistics out there?
Yeah. So it's 1 in 26 people will at some time in their life will be diagnosed with epilepsy, which is huge. Think how many people, you know, right?
So that's a lot.
Yeah. Most likely, you know, somebody that has epilepsy, even if you don't know that they do.
Is it possible that they don't even know?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a specific type of epilepsy called absent seizures, where people kind of just go into a blank stare. So a lot of people that have had epilepsy or seizures in their life and then eventually end up having a grand mal or some bigger type of seizure that's noticeable have had several in their lifetime. They just didn't know it because they've been this where you just go into a blank stare and then you pop back into reality and you just wonder what happened. You know, sometimes it's little shakes, like little tremors. So yeah, usually people do know, but yes, there are some that don't.
Right. And these grand mal seizures, these like the ones that, right, you said most people are at least familiar with or have seen somebody have at one point or another. Are they like the simple act of this physical seizure? Are they dangerous to the person that's having them, or is it something that is just their particular symptom?
It can be. So there's something called SUDEP, which is sudden unexpected death of epilepsy. And it's actually really common. I wish I knew the stats for that, but, that's where people have a seizure. Say they're in the bathtub, they have a seizure and they drown, or they're driving and they get in a car accident, or they fall and they hit their head and
right.
They damage their brain. So there's definite danger that way. This is hard for me to say because I've actually never seen somebody have a grand mal. So it's a really interesting twist on things as I've gone through this, is to talk to people that have loved ones that have epilepsy, because they've seen them have these grand mals and it's so traumatizing for them. But the person that has the seizure has been blacked out and they don't know what happened.
They remember anything.
Right. You wake up and you're just terrified. Like the grand mal that I had, I woke up in the x-ray room and was terrified. I had no idea where I was, but I didn't know what happened. Right. You know, it was just this loss of time. But if you ever see somebody that has a seizure, say you're in the grocery store and you see somebody fall to the ground and start shaking, the best thing that you can do is turn them on their side. So in case they vomit, they don't choke, and make sure they're not where they just protect them from hitting anything.
Wow. I mean, seems a little bit scary. You know what I mean? Like you know, it seems like a very scary thing to have to live with or deal with on a regular basis.
And it's all caused by, like you said, like an electrical storm, like some sort of short circuiting. And that's, I mean, I'm sure, like you said, you could go into this for many, many more podcast episodes, which, hey, maybe we should do. But the general understanding is that something is misfiring and that's what's causing this. It's all from the brain down.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also a statistic for this, which I should have been better prepared. I don't know the numbers, but I think it's almost half of diagnoses don't have a known cause. So that's what gets really scary too.
It's gotta be so frustrating.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I've had some recent conversations with some geneticists and epileptologists that leave some things to question, but I, my whole life have been told when I was 14, we found that when I had that grand mal, I was actually in the hospital and was hooked up to electrodes and had a IV where I shot dye into my IV, and they figured out where the seizure was coming from. And I have a scar on my brain from when I was little. I had meningitis as a baby. So
that's what it's
coming from. That's what they think. But there's also a lot of new research showing that there's genetic mutations where people think there's this cause, but that's actually really not it. So, that's a whole nother boat. Genetic mutations. If it's coming from your DNA, your genes, you got some other things happening that will affect other people's lives potentially if you have kids and all that. So I kind of went off on a tangent. I don't even remember what your question was, Blair.
Well, it was just more about how these things, what the causes of, right?
Yeah. So,
but that's obviously, for most people out there, that's more information on epilepsy than they have ever No,
yeah, that's way more of an education that I've been given.
And that's good because I'm going to throw this out here. Here's my little stab. This month is Epilepsy Awareness Month. So pretty nice of you guys to have me on. I don't know if you knew that this month. So
I did not know that. I thought this was Prostate Cancer Month.
No, I did not know that until...
It's also Caregivers Month.
Yeah, I saw on your Instagram that you had posted that it was Epilepsy Awareness Month. And so I actually was just kind of contrasting that with October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and just a difference in awareness, right? Like I looked at that and I'm like, wow, like if this is a really big thing, and it is apparently, right? Like a lot of people have epilepsy. We might know somebody and not even know it. I don't want to say take anything away from Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I just want to say, hey, maybe we should just also raise more awareness and talk about epilepsy.
All right. And you can look to the campaign that's been, you know, created for breast cancer over the last 10 years, because that's where all this awareness is coming from. You see it on the NFL sidelines and people wearing pink, and like, it's been a very concerted effort to raise awareness. And, you know, that's probably where epilepsy is going in no small part. Do things like you just did.
Well, I hope so. That's my goal. And I think, this month I'll be blogging and posting and putting as much as I know up. I'm recently affiliated with the Athletes Versus Epilepsy, group for the Epilepsy Foundation, which I'm super stoked about, because there's a lot more that we can do with that, and I can hopefully do. But one, I really encourage people, I mean, this is mostly CrossFitters that are listening to this, if you're a member at a gym or you're an owner of a gym, think 1 in 26 people, how many members do you have at your gym, right? There's somebody, and increased stress and exercise is good, but it also can be a trigger for seizure activity. So do your homework and know how to take care of it, because you could save somebody's life if they're in the gym and they fall and have a seizure, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned being diagnosed at 8 years old, you know, not having really the right medication until 14. Mm-hmm. How did that like shape your childhood, you know, in a sense? Like, what was that like? I don't want to like make it seem like it's something more than it was, but I'm just kind of curious, like, what was that like?
It sucked. really bad. I mean, they're the side effects of neurological medication, if you've ever been on it, are absolutely horrendous. You're tired all the time. And that's not like, oh, I'm kind of tired. Like, you're physically exhausted all the time. Some worse than others. I had extreme weight gain for one of the medications I was on. Like, I was a little blimp for a little bit of my childhood, which isn't good. People make fun of you, right? And you don't feel good. I saw double. I had double vision with one of them. So I'd go be playing softball, and I would see two softballs coming at me. So maybe it helped my eye-hand coordination. I don't know. Maybe I'm a better athlete for it. Who knows?
Yeah. Fantastic juggler.
I'm so good.
And kids are ruthless too. You know what I mean? Did they mess with you at all? I mean, did you get any of that? Like,
so I'm really lucky because of the fact that mine is just in my arm. I would have seizures, and like, I could have a seizure right now and you guys probably wouldn't know. And that's common with a lot of seizures. I've had them in the middle of soccer games. I've actually had one while I was driving, but I knew it was happening, so I could pull over to the side of the road and I don't lose consciousness. So yes, kids are ruthless, but I didn't tell anybody until 2012, except for my really close friends. So I spent most of my life, like most people with epilepsy, kind of hiding it, because there's a stigma that comes with it and you don't want people to think you're weird. And I mean, really the severity of mine compared to other cases is not nearly as obvious, I guess. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. So,
well, it just doesn't like,
it doesn't define me.
Yeah. That's not necessary for it to be known because of, it doesn't affect your daily life. It forces what you can function and do.
Right.
Like, you can handle a seizure a lot better than somebody who is, like you said, having a grandma and, you know, blacking out.
Yeah. Right. Well, not necessary, but how much more freeing, if I could use that word, is it once people got to know?
That's the exact word. And I didn't know. I'm so fortunate that Marcus Brown, my boyfriend, gave me the strength to do something that I guess maybe he helped me realize I had the strength to do something I didn't know that I had inside of me. So I think it was like 2 days before 2012 regionals, maybe it was the day of, I'm not sure, that we released the YouTube video, Jenny LaBaugh Living with Epilepsy. And the response that I got that day going into regionals was insane. I mean, people from all over, whether they were CrossFitters or in the epilepsy world or just people that I've known forever and didn't know, just the response that people gave was overwhelmingly positive. And that was when I knew, like, man, this feels good. Like, this feels good to talk about. This feels really good to let this off my chest, something that you've been holding in forever. Giving people the strength that Marcus, I guess, helping people find the same strength that Marcus helped me find. So that was 2 years later, or what, 3 years later, I finally got to where I am now. And I was able to do something bigger and better because of CrossFit and the platform that I had developed throughout that. And now people are realizing that same thing, the freeing, that's the exact word, Ben, the freeing aspect of how good it feels to, number one, educate people, to let people know, but also to let down a guard that you've had up your whole life, you know?
Let's talk about a little bit about the Move Mountains project. We'll call it a project. Specifically, you ran 500 miles across your home state of Colorado from south border to north border. And I know from just being around you that you picked a somewhat difficult route with, I think, what, 7 or 8 mountain passes. So maybe you can tell us and the listeners a little bit about why you chose this type of a project to kind of bring awareness to epilepsy. I mean, there's a lot of other ways to do that. This is definitely not the easy road, literally. So talk a little bit about that.
Number one, I love to run. So that's been, I used to run quite a bit before I started doing CrossFit. And when I got into CrossFit, that was my strength. So I needed to work on my weaknesses. So I really got away from something that I loved. So a big part for me was to go run. Speaking of the freeing thing, when I run, like that's so freeing to me. You know, your brain, you're being able to cover ground with nothing but your own body. You have no other machine or mechanism to get you going except for your own 2 feet and your lungs. So, that was a big part of it, was for the running aspect. The route I chose because it was beautiful. It was absolutely going to be the most beautiful route to go over the Colorado Rockies. I originally was thinking east to west, and I looked at the map. I'm like, man, if you've ever been to Colorado, like up until you get to Denver, it's pretty much Kansas.
Right.
So the first half of the route would have been flat.
Pretty flat and pretty boring.
And smell like cows. So, yeah. So I chose to go over the Rockies because I knew it was going to be beautiful and it was fall. So the colors were outrageous. And I think that's about it.
What, if you could, I have a couple questions about this. First question is, did you find it more difficult running up the mountains or down the mountains? Because you were going up and down, and we can throw some stats at these people about how many miles you're running in each day, which, you know, it's 20 miles a day, essentially. But what was the more difficult terrain for you?
They had their own difficulties, right? So the second day I started up the first pass, and I realized quickly that it's faster when you're going up super steep hills for like 5 miles to walk. So I started running. I'm like, man, my legs are on fire. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this. So you learn quickly, like it's going to be more efficient to walk fast up the big steep hills. So muscle wise, harder to go up. Downhill though is way harder on your body because of the impact and, just the jarring. Like
it's like a
toes.
Bunch of mini falls, right? Like a fall just, over and over and over and over again.
Did you start going backwards at all?
Like, no, I
backwards
didn't.
Backwards walking?
I tried a couple times uphill, but I had to push off my toes, and my toes were such a wreck that I couldn't do it.
No, I mean downhill. Going backwards downhill.
No, dude, I would have eaten it. Oh. I would have been, like, there would have been road rash everywhere. No, so, maybe I should have. I don't know. Next time, I'll
I don't know.
That.
I feel like when I run downhill a lot, and I'm not even comparing what I've done to anything that you did, but like I get it in my joints. Like my knees and ankles get tired going downhill, yeah. And so then I'll start to go like side shuffle or back pedal, just because it changes. Like you're not using that the front of your legs so much to absorb all that shock. You know.
Part of it though. So if it was my choice, I would have done the entire route on a mountain trail. And not see a soul.
Right.
That's not good for awareness.
True.
So
it's not good for the cargo van.
Nope. So I had to do a lot of it on roads, like majority of it on roads. So that you have to look where you're going. I was diving over guardrails. People were trying to run me off the road. So there's, as far as changing your, your eyes going forward. Otherwise you might not come out alive that day.
Gotcha.
So that
plays a pretty big role in your strategy.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
You know, we can all relate to this, I think, when you have a workout that you're going to do, like a, I don't know, some nasty Metcon, right? It's never a lifting day. It's like a nasty Metcon. And you're like, I don't even know if I want to do this workout right now. And it takes, you show up at the gym or you show up in your garage or whatever, and you start getting ready. And then eventually, you know, it's kind of reaching this kind of crescendo where you're like, not sure that you really want to do it, but you hit the 10 seconds so you got to go. And then you pretty much know that you're in it. Was there any of that with you when you were getting ready to do this? Like when you're about ready to go, it's probably hard to think about your first step. It's probably really easy to think about the last ones. But when you think about that first step, was it hard just to start? Or was there any of that kind of anxiety? Or did you not really have that?
I was so excited. There was not any anxiety. And I was really lucky. If you read my last blog post on labalife.com, or maybe it was two blog posts ago, the first day I had a really, really cool experience. And the first day, if nothing else went right after that first day, I knew that it was worth it because I had two people join. Well, there were three people that ran, but there was a group of people at the start line on the New Mexico Colorado border. But one of the guys, Jim Schoenberg, is a CrossFit box owner in New Mexico, Albuquerque, CrossFit Sandstorm. And he reached out to me maybe like 3 weeks before the run. He'd seen some of the posts on social media through CrossFit and also through Invictus, and contacted me. And he said, hey, he's like, I've got epilepsy and I admire you for what you're doing. He's like, I've never been able to tell anybody. He was diagnosed 5 years ago, had his first seizure at 33 years old. He told his wife, but he's never really gone outside of that. His kids didn't even know. Like, wow. So terrified to say anything to anybody. Right. So I email or text or Facebook back and forth them. And then he's like, yeah, good luck. He's like, I used to be an ultra runner. I was like, back the train up. All right. Well, I was like, conveniently you're 3 hours from where I'm starting. You were an ultra runner. You're a CrossFitter and you've got epilepsy. I feel like we have something in common and our paths were meant to meet. So I said, if you have any desire, I would love to have you there at the start line to run any bit of it or just ride in a car. And he was kind of hesitant at first, and I guess it was 3 days before he sent me a message, and he's like, I just got back from Jamaica. I'm totally out of shape. I was just on a bender. He's like, but I want to come. And I was like, all right, dude, let's do it. So I sent him I called him the day I was driving down to New Mexico, and he joined me, and we ran. He ran the first 14 miles. So long story short, that first step was so awesome because it was with a guy that was taking the first step into pretty much a whole new life for him as far as being able to now talk and share his story. And he had talked to his kids the night before and told his kids about epilepsy and tried to educate him on what to do. And he sends me a text. He's like, I'm sorry. His kids are, I think, I'm going to hopefully get this right, 5 and 9. And he said, please don't be offended if my kids ask you like weird questions about this, because they're just finding out about epilepsy. He said his son asked him, Daddy, when you're getting electrocuted, if I touch you, will I get electrocuted too? Which is
a pretty good knowledge of electricity, though.
It absolutely
for a, for
I know,
a child. It's pretty
right?
impressive.
That's exactly. So, yeah, so that kind of went off on a tangent, but those first steps were probably the easiest, you know, because I had people there with me that needed them maybe more than I did.
Yeah, that's a very good tangent. I feel like that is a good microcosm of what this is going to hopefully do, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just a good picture of you're that freeing feeling that you felt, he probably experienced 24 hours before when he's talking to his kids.
Yeah.
And then you guys get to do this run together, you know what I mean? Just because of your motivation just to start, you know, and raise awareness. That's pretty cool. I got to imagine that's like a really good feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
And a great way to start things off.
That was awesome.
What type of emotional and mental hurdles were you having to overcome? I think the physical is pretty obvious, but
probably zero,
that's not the
right?
hardest
probably
part.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, what are you talking about?
Probably no issues.
I was great
at all.
The whole time.
I was happy the whole time.
Right.
Every step was wonderful. Wow. So I could be here all day. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, everything in my life. The hardest thing. You're in your head for 31 days, just the lowest of lows, the highest of highs, and everything in between. And you're trying to mentally overcome the pain you're feeling. And emotionally, I was taken back to those years from 8 to 14 when I was so scared and so hurt and so confused, and memories that I didn't even know I had came back of like sitting in front of a toilet, having a retching attack, and my brother rubbing my back, just like crazy, crazy things that were so deep and probably hidden for a long time that came out. That's related to epilepsy, but it ended up, obviously the goal was to spread awareness for epilepsy and give people some strength to do what they needed to do, but it ended up being very much about overcoming adversity and the people that would come. It's, I mean, yes, it's about epilepsy, but we all have our own crap that we're dealing with every single day. And to just keep moving forward and take those steps and rely on the team that you have with you, whatever team that is, you know. So there was a lot of times when I didn't want to keep moving. And Marcus,
you remember any specific moments
with, like, what do you mean?
Like, were you like, hey, I think
wanting to shut it down, call it good.
Oh, yeah. I think I've gone far enough.
Pretty much every morning. No, I'm just kidding. No, there was one, we were in Gunnison and my left pinky toe was the size of my arm. It hurt so bad. It was purple. Like it just, I couldn't stand. I had flip flops on and I could not stand up. It wasn't the shoe. I thought I was gonna have to cut my toe off. And I looked at Marcus and I'm like, this was like a week and a half in. I said, I don't know if I can keep going tomorrow. My foot hurts so bad. And he's like, do what you can today to take care of it. And we'll see how you feel in the morning. And I said, well, if nothing else, I'll just have to like hobble in my flip flops up the highway to Crested Butte. And I woke up the next morning and I don't want to say it felt good. It didn't feel good, but I was able to put my shoe on and run, and every step was completely and totally agonizing, but eventually your feet go numb and you're able to just, I remember that day looking around and being like, I'm so lucky. How lucky am I right now? Number one, I can feel my feet, because some people can't even feel their feet. Number two, I'm in some of the most beautiful country in the world, in my mind, and I'm doing something to help others, which is, and I have the ability to do it, you know. So there was a lot of really negative times that ended up resulting in some of the most positive self-reflection.
You know, your foot goes numb, right? And then you start running again, or you keep running, or you run faster, or whatever. I feel like that's like, isn't that like the body's defense mechanism, right? Like if you have like a bad injury, but you have to keep moving to save your life, it will go numb so you can keep moving. But you just decide to do it by choice. Right. You know, you're like, my foot is going like is completely jacked up, but I'm just going to keep running.
Well, my goal was not to hurt myself, obviously. And I talked to some of my
friends. I'm looking at your toes right now, and I don't think you were necessarily successful.
Well, I mean,
in not hurting yourself.
What's wrong with them, Ben? Draining of blood, but yeah.
Right. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. The, not the blisters, but the finish line.
Oh,
so you had some support at the start. I'm assuming there was some sort of celebration and support at the finale, but for all those long days and nights, I mean, was it really just, you know, you and Marcus, and did you have the dogs with you?
Oh yeah. The girls were with us. And then Tori Zellick, who is a really good friend here from Chico, and she's a massage therapist. She came with me. So she was working on my legs
the entire time.
The entire time. Yeah.
Okay.
And her father, Vaughn, who, was with us the whole time too, just because he wanted to be there. He kept us organized. Tori kept my body in shape. Marcus videoed me, and together we all tried to keep my mind where it needed to be. But yeah, there was a lot of lonely time on the road. And that's, even though there was four people and two dogs, like there were times when I've never felt more alone, you know, like and my parents were in and out, and we had friends in and out. There was most of the time I was running by myself, but, yeah, I just can't explain it. There's no words to explain that.
Well, there's some lonely times. There's some dark times. Like you're saying, like memories are coming back and resurfacing. I mean, I feel like people pay like thousands of dollars to see psychiatrists, and really they can just go out on the open road and just run for a few hundred miles, and they could probably work out a lot of their demons. But of all the times when you wanted to quit or when you wanted to just be done, what was like the worst thing that went through your head? You know what I mean? Like what was the worst? You're like, I cannot believe I'm here right now. And cause I'm thinking about fill in the blank, you know?
I don't know if it's a worst thing, but my fear was that I wasn't going to be able to finish, and I wouldn't be able to fulfill the goal of being able to give people the strength to try, you know? Like, I don't know if that's the right answer.
That is a very LaBossom answer.
Fear of failure, right?
That is a LaBossom answer.
And it wasn't a fear of like, I'm not going to be able to cross the finish line. It was a fear of like, I'm going to let some people down, and that sucks, because this is why I'm doing this. I'm doing this to show people that that they're stronger than they may think they are, you know. But I finished, and I've had a lot of people come up to me and tell me that and send me email. I mean, it's constant all day long. So I need to hire a secretary for my email, but it's so cool to see how many people were touched by it, you know.
Now, how has the message been getting out? I mean, we have basic social media access to you, but you know, obviously you have some more or a bigger plan for that. Like, what have you been doing to promote what you have done and what you're going to do?
Social media is a big one. My website, labalife.com, I made it myself. So I'm sorry if you go on there and it's pretty elementary, but I'm pretty elementary when it comes to this stuff. So that's where I've started.
I just want to run and I want to worry about the websites,
all that technology. Podcasts, like that's been a big one. Not necessarily just CrossFit, you know, but podcasts from all over the place have been able to get on. I was on the Channel 9 NBC News in Denver, Colorado, which was so cool. Like the day after the run, it was like the real deal. We were like on a little lounge and all these cameras and it was pretty cool. So that was a big one. The Epilepsy Foundation, that's who all the fundraising went to. They're doing some stuff and yeah, I don't know where to go in the future. I want it to be bigger for sure, but I have to be patient and continue to just keep doing what I'm doing on. I think social media is more powerful than I know, you know? So that's a big one.
Yeah, for sure. I want to go back to the run and just like kind of surviving that. Cause this is something that I'm not very good at, surviving runs and anything. You know, I mean, I just even heard your answer about like, what was the worst thing with your mind? I was like letting people down. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I would have 3 days in, I'd be looking at the gravel road underneath me and I would just think like, I'm going to throw my face down on the ground and just end my life. So that way I can get out of this without letting people down, you know, like, it's so rough, but
you really don't like running.
No, I don't. So, but we walked in and we got to see you and you're obviously lighter than you were when you started the run and you lost some weight. How much weight did you lose? You know, you were talking about different things that you were doing to try to keep weight on or you just maintain a relative, you know, level of health. Like, what was that like?
I lost 13 pounds total. So at the halfway point, I was at my mom's house and I'm like, oh, I should probably weigh myself because I know I'm a little bit smaller. I got on and I was 11 pounds down. I was like, oh man, I can't finish this race 20 pounds lighter. That's not going to be a good thing. So, I'd been eating really, really well. I eat pretty clean, I would say. So I had to go away from that. I still ate. I would have 2 hard-boiled eggs and a banana before I ran, and then like right when I got up, and then I'd run, do the run, and throughout the run, I'd have like baby food package, just mashed up sweet potato and some anti-inflammatory spices and stuff inside of it. And then after the run, I would have a gluten-free. What do you call it? Muffin that I had a company called True Nature Kitchen that sponsored the food. And so they made all this amazing food for me that I was able to eat, but it was seriously so hard to eat. I was force feeding every single bite. Cause you're just not hungry when your stomach is riled from running 20 miles every day. You're just, the thought of food just is, ugh, just gross. So then there would be these meals. She had lean meat and veggies and rice and I'd heat those up and eat them and try to eat one, maybe two of those a day if I could. But, yeah, at that halfway point when I was 11 pounds down, I started eating peanut M&Ms and salt and vinegar potato chips and Doritos.
We're talking about this freeing feeling, right? Like that freeing feeling. I mean, like, man, yeah. There's a second one for you.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was not healthy, but I had to get super calorically dense, easy, accessible energy right away or my body was going to just be depleted. So I used it as an opportunity to eat crap. On top of the good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have, I think for something that big, you have to have a strategy for what you're going to eat. It sounds like you had some nice sponsors that helped you out with that. What was your strategy on the actual running? I kind of assumed that you would be breaking it up into small bits and the kind of running like 2 hours here, 2 hours there throughout the day, but that's not what it sounds like you did.
No, so I didn't know. I ran one marathon ever in my life in 2006. I qualified for Boston. I crossed the finish line because I saw my time and I looked at my mom and I was like, I'm never running another marathon in my life. This was horrible. And then now 11 or 8, what is that? My math is as good as Blair's. Right. 9 years later.
52 years later.
52 years later, I was running almost a marathon a day. So my strategy was to go by how I felt. And I planned it. I planned the whole thing by myself. I planned it to where the first couple of weeks were more the longer mileage days. And then I'd taper, like 17, 18 mile days at the end, thinking that my body was going to be tired and things were going to be sore. And that was, if I were to do it again, I would do it the opposite because,
the opposite way,
I got in better shape. That's, how do you train for 500 miles? I have no idea, but Brian McKenzie from CrossFit Endurance, he programmed for me leading up to the run, and he did an awesome job, very much CrossFit interval based training. So the most I ever ran was 15 and a half miles, I think. And I did two or three 15 milers before the run. And I only trained for 2.5 months before with running, and the rest of it was like 5K intervals, some 800 meter repeats, just things like that. So going into the run, I had no idea what to do. And I just went by feel. And there were days that I would feel like I could go the entire 20 miles without, and some days were, I had a couple like 26 mile, 27 miles, but there were days you could keep going and days where you had to run. And like I ran when my toes were so bad, I'd run like 10 to 11 miles and I'd stop and rebandage my feet and put new socks on and then hobble my way into numbness again and finish it up. So it was always, it was different strategies every day.
Was the time of day a factor? Were you trying to run at certain times of day where you knew you were going to feel better?
It wasn't how I felt. It was more on the weather. So surprisingly, we didn't get rain or snow the entire time, which is crazy. I was confident we were going to be dumped on, but it was hot, really, really hot the first couple of weeks. So the asphalt, being on asphalt most of the time, it would get really hot. So I would leave early, not very early. I'd have to get my, it took me like an hour to tape my toes every day. So, I think we would start between like 7:30 and 8:30 every morning. I would go and then finish by like 11:30, 12, sometimes longer, depending on, but it was around that time before it got too hot. And then at the end it started getting colder. So I would start a little bit later so that it wasn't freezing and I would have my hands and arms didn't go numb,
And you just kind of stack up your eating and everything else around.
Yeah.
That time frame.
Well, I would sleep until I would wake up, and I didn't sleep very well. It was hard.
Really?
Your body's, you're so tired, but I'm sure my cortisol was pretty messed up, which I got blood work done. I got
just maybe.
But no, I got my blood
stress
work done.
Levels might have been high.
I got my blood work done and my blood work came back totally normal. I got a saliva test. I'm waiting for the results on to get a little more accurate. So maybe it wasn't messed up. I don't know, but I would imagine it had to have been skewed a little. So I think my sleep wasn't, and we're sleeping in a camper and it's your work.
A lot. Did you ever think about, hey, maybe a hotel would be nice?
Oh, we did. It was probably just a little, we had a lot of people that donated hotel rooms which was awesome. And there were a couple nights that were just like, okay, it's cold and we're tired. Let's get a real bed. But, then I have family that I stayed with along the run too. So I would say maybe a little over half the time we were camping. So it was good, but I love to camp too,
It's organic.
Something about campfires that kind of mesmerizing and we smelled so bad. Oh God, we smelled so bad. I mean, you think I would be the stinky one. Marcus's armpits, my God. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, it's hard just being in the van all the time,
Yeah. He actually worked really hard. He was on the bike. He'd do sprint intervals on the bike because he'd be videoing. So he'd like sprint ahead and then he'd
So he video. Almost biked across Colorado, right?
No.
No. Not that much.
No, he was in the car. He was in a car.
Not that much
he
credit.
Was in a, not that much biking. He was in the van a lot.
Yeah. So now that you're back, you've been done with this project for what? Oh, 2 weeks now?
2 weeks, 2 weeks, yeah. 2 days. Yeah.
And you already told us that you've gone running, seven or eight times since. So your body must be feeling good. Your toes are getting back to normal.
Once the toenails.
That's normal?
Hey.
What a lot better like than before? It was. I didn't, those pictures were.
I know the pictures
once the toenails fell off, the pressure went away. So they didn't hurt. It was the pressure, I think, of the blister under the toenail.
Yeah.
Have you retested your one rep maxes and things like that since being done?
I don't
post 500 mile one rep max.
But Yeah, no, like I can barely deadlift 50% of my max. No, I went to go, I think my previous deadlift, I'm not a good deadlifter. I think my previous deadlift max was 315. And so I went to go, I'm like, well, I'll just do like a couple reps at like 5 reps at 225 and literally could do 2 reps. And I thought I was going to blow my back out. So I feel like I've lost some strength.
Right. Maybe lost a little bit of strength. So
yeah.
Just for all of you out there who are thinking about maybe just, you know, periodizing your training and doing a month of just running.
Don't.
Don't do it.
That definitely being, affects other areas of your fitness is what you're saying.
Yes.
That being said, if you had time to do this all over again, would you still, I guess you could do it all over again. We can talk about that. But do 2.5 months of training leading up to it? Or do you think you should have trained longer or shorter, or was it adequate?
No, I think the running was great. I'm really lucky. I have an engine. People say I have a third lung. I don't think I do, but I've never been tested for that. So maybe I do, but I think for me, like I have an engine I can go. So I don't think that I needed to train any more than that. I still was strength training up to it. You know, I didn't lose much strength training for it, but, I had great intentions. I'm like, yeah, I think I brought some dumbbells and a kettlebell and my crossover symmetry and
on your run.
Oh yeah. I wasn't going to lose all my muscle mass, Ben. Yeah, no, I finished and I'm like, God, I got on the table and like work on my legs. I'm so tired. And that wasn't happening. So
yeah, that's just too much. Like you said, I mean,
it was going to be like single leg deadlifts and just maintenance. I wasn't going to be doing any like wads, but yeah.
Well, it'd be nice for range of motion, right? That's the biggest thing we see with people that run is you get chronic injury from the repetitive movement. So you think, oh, okay, do some squats or some single leg deadlifts. I'll like really stretch the muscle bellies out and maybe prevent some nagging stuff. But 20 plus miles a day is just,
you're tired.
You're so tired.
But it was really funny. So there was one portion from Glenwood Springs to this Canyon Creek. It's like 6 miles through this canyon that it's illegal to run in. You have to ride your bike. So for 6 miles of the entire trip, I had to ride my bike, and I'm not kidding. That was 6 of the hardest miles because I was at the halfway, a little over halfway point. My hamstrings were on fire. My back was on fire. I was like, man, so this whole cross training thing, there's really something to it. That whole range of motion. Every day I would try to like just squat, you know, go sit in a squat and try to move my joints to full range of motion. But yeah.
Are you excited to get back to strength training and doing some CrossFit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I 2 days after I went to a CrossFit gym, Sopra's CrossFit, and got to work out in. I absolutely am, but I think my approach has changed drastically. I had to really work on, not that I don't have to work on strength now, but I really had to work on strength before and just technical aspect of the sport of CrossFit. And I really love and miss. I love running and I miss running, and I know that that's going to still continue to be a big part of my training now.
Yeah.
So your engine's just going to get better.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Better and better. That third lung.
I hope so. Maybe I'll get a fourth one. Can you grow lungs?
Ooh,
Ben,
I can't. I can't. So, okay. So the run
like
is.
You have a lung in your quad.
I do.
Just like, soaks up all your oxygen. Okay.
All right. If I was wearing Labossum's pants, okay, these quads would be popping out almost as much as hers, because hers are pretty freaking big despite the fact that they're smaller than they used to be. They're still freaky. So what's next? You know, like we're raising awareness, we're getting people, including myself, like more aware of epilepsy and things like that, and then the challenges that present themselves with that. What's next? Like, what do you want to do next? How do you take this and springboard it, I guess, into something bigger?
Yeah. I don't know yet. That's something that I've literally been home for 2.5 days. So I've got to take some time to wrap my brain around what
figure
happened.
It out.
I gotta
figure
go
out.
Now.
Hey,
go
clock
now.
Is ticking, LaBah.
I gotta wrap. I mean, I haven't really had any alone time to even think about what's happened, you know, like I've gotta wrap my brain around that, but I know that this is why I was successful. This is going to sound funny, but it's why I was successful at CrossFit, so that now I have a bigger platform than I ever would have before to spread awareness and do something bigger about whether it's epilepsy or overcoming adversity or the importance of a healthy lifestyle and neurological disorders, whatever it is. I don't know. I need to think about that, but I think that Move Mountains will be an annual event, not necessarily running across Colorado, but there will be some kind of annual event that is, it is going to be for epilepsy.
Maybe we could do it like relay style.
Yeah.
Like, is there some Ragnar
race? Yeah, like Ragnar race.
Yeah, yeah. Ragnar race, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, BTB is going to have a team next year.
Okay, be so I'll be good. The driver.
I'll be the driver.
I'll be the driver. No, I'll run as far as I can.
Yeah.
So essentially, I'll be the driver, but I'll do what I can.
Those first few steps are going to be so good, though.
Yeah, you're going to feel so good.
You can lead
fresh
us
air.
Look at that guy's quads. Oh, my gosh. He's way behind everyone else.
He's a runner.
Well, quads are indicative of good runners, and I should be a decent runner because you can run and you have giant quads. So,
well,
so you're trying to raise awareness on just continue to move forward in that sense, you know, but you mentioned this overcoming adversity and maybe broadening your reach a little bit in terms of just epilepsy, but just other things as well.
Yeah. Cause I think I can still get my story out, which is epilepsy. That's my adversity. One of them, you know, I mean, that's a big thing that I've had to overcome. So I think that it can be like essentially killing two birds with one stone. You know, you get to spread the word about epilepsy, but help so many other people to realize that they can't be defined, or they shouldn't let their diagnosis or their adversity, their obstacles define who they are.
Yeah. I think like the most important and almost most powerful thing that you said was just the fact that you live with this like hidden for so long. Right. And then you came out and that was like a very freeing feeling. Like, I feel like a lot of people have a lot of things like that in their life that they just don't want to admit to, or, you know, fess up to, or whatever the case may be, and just let people know, you know, and just like, there's something powerful in that. So that's very cool that you want to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're not sure how that's going to broaden. What are you focusing on for yourself, so to speak? You know what I mean? Is it, you know, what's next for you?
Oh man. Okay. So
besides the Spartan race this weekend,
Yeah. First I'm going to crush.
Are you going to get another dog
Spartan.
Or are you going to, you know, what's
going on? Well, that'd be weird. If we had like 8 dogs, because there's currently 6 on the property. So.
Well, I mean, 6 is kind of weird. So, I mean, I'm just wondering when you're going to stop.
Only 2 of them are ours.
Right?
Though.
I start adopting kids and things like that. I have 4 kids. People are like, oh, it's kind of weird. You have 4 kids. Yeah. Like, well, I might as well get 5, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what's one more?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the dog thing is a very natural question for somebody like me.
Yeah, well, no more dogs, I don't think. But hopefully family in the future, if I can talk Marcus into it. But yeah, we're...
Whoa, what do you mean by family?
Like additional people.
Additional people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Little ones.
That's right. You
little
saw
people.
We brought
little ones.
We brought my daughter up with us today.
So yeah. Parenthood.
Oh man.
How quickly Jenny just went to
they
her.
Yeah. Snatched
moth
her.
To the she flame.
My arms hurt so bad. My feet are sweating. Oh, there's a baby.
That's a
Can
baby.
I hold that baby
Life
right
is
there?
Good. Life
I'm
is
gonna
good.
Hold it for the next 20 minutes.
Yes.
Awkwardly stare at it. Okay.
It's okay. So family maybe, but I think on a personal note, I think I've got some serious self-reflection to continue to do, you know, like you grow once you've done something like this. For me, at least, it's a pretty eye-opening experience as to what you want to do with your life. And I know that I love what I do. Coming back, being away from coaching and coming back to coaching, I honestly was like, I don't think I can go back to real life. I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I hope I have the ability to coach. I hope I have the empathy to coach. I hope I have all of that here still. And I wasn't looking forward to it. And the day that my first client came in, I was like, this is why I do what I do. I genuinely love this, you know? So I think that yes, that's going to happen. I also know that I really, really, really love and need to be in the mountains. So we're trying to figure out how we can be in 2 places at one time. Is that possible?
I don't know.
No, we're going to try to do halftime here, halftime Colorado, somehow, some way, someday. Yeah. So there's,
I was gonna say, you're in the middle of a pretty large scale construction project out here.
I mean, it kind of stopped. So,
I mean, you talk about adversity. I mean, why not create your own and try to be in 2 places at once?
You know
what I mean? Like,
that's an obstacle.
Yeah, that's definitely, if you solve that, I feel like you have a really big platform.
I feel like you're right.
If you can put yourself in 2 places at once,
yeah.
You're going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, the bossum, excuse me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is definitely, I mean, where you live, for those of people that didn't hear our last episode, I mean, Jenny lives on a lake, like a man-made lake, kind of in the country, but it's very flat. It's definitely not mountainous, but it does have plenty of space. So the type of reflection that you're looking to do, I mean, you're definitely not going to be crowded here. while you do it?
I'm so lucky. Like, where we live is pretty, it's pretty rad. You know, there's not a lot of people that have what we have. I literally walk 14 steps down my stairs and I'm in my gym. I walk 50 steps, I'm in, at a lake. I can drive 20 minutes and I'm in the hills. Like, everywhere we can, 2 hours to the coast, 2 hours to Tahoe, an hour and a half to Sacramento. We're in a really good location, but there really is something about the mountains of Colorado that my heart is just there. It's there, you know? So somehow, some way that's going to happen. I don't know how, but it will. And maybe it's just continuing to run across the state once a month or once a year.
Larger priority, finding a way to be a parent or finding a way to get to Colorado.
Ooh, man.
If you have one right now, what would you pick?
I want two things.
I think you know what you want. You just don't want to say it.
I know. Yeah. I don't know how, Blair.
Yes.
How has your life changed being a father?
How has my life changed being a father?
Oh, I so love it. See how unprepared he was? He had to repeat the question. Right? When the podcast interviewee becomes the interviewer, it's such a great dynamic.
Look out.
Anyway, go ahead, Blair.
You're distracting me from thinking about my answer. Well, there's a couple levels. So on the face of like what my life looked like before to what it looks like now, like on an hour-to-hour basis, it's not that different. Because most of the early month, responsibilities fall on the mother with breastfeeding and, that kind of stuff. So I help and I'm doing more around the house. Like I'm doing most of the cooking and cleaning and things like that. But there hasn't been a dramatic shift in like what I do day to day. I still coach the same number of classes I coach. I still train about the same amount of hours that I train. So from that perspective, there hasn't been like a dramatic shift in my lifestyle.
Absentee father.
Right. This from the guy who just said he went into his garage last night at 10:15 to do a 20-minute AMRAP.
After I put my kids in bed.
but emotionally, you know, there's definitely been a change. And that's noticeable and it's unavoidable. Like when you have an addition to your family like that, you almost can't even like handle the amount of new emotion that you're feeling, you know, like we were just laughing earlier. Like my favorite thing is to watch her wake up and stretch. Cause it's so cute. And like really and kind of funny, you know, like babies are so funny. And they're just like this whole like burst of unintentional, like happiness and innocence. That's like being thrust into your life. Like, and you really, you just feel like you didn't force it. I technically you created it, but like, it's just kind of happening around you. So from that sense, it's definitely been a nice change and like surprising in a lot of ways.
So basically then I need to have Marcus breastfeed so my life doesn't change and I can then.
Yeah. If you're going to have the baby, you're not going to be able to run across the state.
So Marcus,
right away.
So as long as Marcus can birth the baby, we can do both, right?
Or you could adopt a baby.
This is so awkward. Everybody looks at me like I'm some sort of
just
expert.
Trying to...
Everybody's like, Ben, can we do this? You sure?
Yeah.
Go for it.
That's Marcus definitely going to work.
Absolutely. Can he carry the child? I think so.
He's a pretty amazing person. Yeah. He can do a lot of things.
I think if it's like that close of an either or, then you should definitely go with the mountains.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, it's not that close of an either or.
I knew
I'm just saying it for Marcus's sake.
I knew it. That's what I said. I think you know the answer, but the reality is you didn't want to say it.
Right.
The reality was you want a baby.
Right.
Yeah. You want a baby.
Well, it's also a timing thing.
Right?
Yeah, I mean,
the clock's ticking.
I'm not young.
You're 33?
Yeah.
Well, you're not old either.
That's right.
Oh, good. That's been another old joke. Yeah, we're all 33, right?
What?
Yeah, we're all 33.
Yeah, all of us are 33.
Who's the oldest? When's your birthday, Ben?
July 25th.
April.
March.
Oh, you are the oldest.
I am. I'm so much wiser than you guys.
Barely. Well, in life experience, I think I could have rivaled you in life experience until this past thing.
No, once you have a kid.
That's a lot.
Once you have a kid.
You have a kid.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I forgot. See, I'm so new to it. I didn't even realize.
Totally forgot I had a kid.
Absentee father.
Win. All right, Ben, how are we doing on time over there?
Oh, we're looking pretty good, but I think we should start wrapping this thing up. But, you know, if people want to continue to follow
Labawlife.com, right?
Labawlife.com. I'm surprised your website is not labawesomeness.com.
Well, however much I love that name.
That's sarcasm.
That's why I keep talking about it.
Yeah. Thanks, Kelly, for that one. Mm. Yeah, no, it's just labawlife.com.
Labawlife.com.
Well, the whole reason I did that, because I have JennyLabaw.com, but I feel like that was like all about fitness. And I want to blog about like gardening and running across Colorado and building a house and like everything. It's about my life, you know? So eventually that's where it will all go. But right now the focus is epilepsy. So yeah.
Very cool. And then if you do anything on there, then you kind of release it via your social media usually. And your social media is just, what is it?
Jen, J-E-N, Labaw on, at Jen Labaw on Twitter and Instagram.
You're a big Twitterer. You're a big tweeter.
No, I'm not. You just on Instagram, I just always hit Twitter and Facebook. So it goes from Instagram to both of those. I literally never get on Twitter.
But you used to, I feel like I remember when I got on Twitter, and I was like, I hate Twitter. I don't like this tweeting thing at all. But you were tweeting all the time. And it was not just like pictures from Instagram. It was like text. You were writing stuff on Twitter.
I used to do it a lot. Yeah. So I think Twitter is like the business, like everyone can see it texting, right? Isn't that what Twitter is pretty much? Like you're having conversations with people.
Kind of. Or giving like news updates on things. Like people tweet a lot about.
It's really big for business stuff is what I'm finding. Like news. Like that was one thing when we're trying to get on like NBC News and stuff. It's really big for that. So we have an article coming out in Runner's World too.
Hey.
Runner's World magazine. So.
Wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So subscribe to Runner's World, go to Labaw Life, and follow at Jen Labaw on Instagram because that's where she's putting everything. And then it's just being siphoned off onto
with
Facebook.
Twitter
and, yeah. Okay.
Jenny Labaw on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Very cool. And you guys can follow us at BTB Podcast. You can follow Blair. I mean, Blair's a pretty interesting guy. He's got a kid now.
Yeah, Morrison_Blair. I post pictures of the baby.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
I'm becoming less active.
Ben, you know what? You're not. Yeah, right. You're still like four
posts
really a day.
You're really active. You're super active.
I try to be active, actually.
Let's tell them about the coffee mugs.
Ooh.
The coffee mugs? Okay. Yeah. So Blair and I, we figured out a special design for these coffee mugs that we bought online. And actually, here's our new logo. We're putting on some coffee mugs. And those are going to be available online really short. We have travel mugs and, you know, your regular coffee mugs when you're sitting on the couch. Picking your toes that are falling off from a 500-mile run.
Listening to archived episodes of Beyond the Barbell.
Right. As you do. As everyone does.
As everyone does.
Yeah. So you can be doing it just like everybody else with a Beyond the Barbell mug.
Yeah. But you're only going to be able to get them if you guys subscribe to the podcast and if you come get our newsletter because that's where we're going to be announcing all those new things.
All right. Thanks,
Jenny.
Cool.
Thank you guys so much.